She turned back and went up the stairs. The top floor was dry and consisted of two similar rooms, each about 65 feet square and at least 25 feet high. There were tall, inaccessible windows close to the ceiling, which provided no view but let in plenty of light. The upper floor, like the workshop downstairs, was full of junk. There were dozens of 3-foot-high packing cases stacked on top of one another. She gripped one of them but could not move it. The label on the crate read, Machine Parts 0-A77, with an apparently corresponding label in Russian underneath. She noticed an open freight elevator halfway down one wall of the first room. It was a machine warehouse of some sort, but that would hardly generate income so long as the machinery stood there rusting. She went into the inner room and discovered that this was where the repair work must have been carried out. The room was again full of rubbish, boxes, and old office furniture arranged in some sort of labyrinthine order. A section of the floor was exposed where new floor planks had been laid. Salander guessed that the renovation work had been stopped abruptly. A cross-cut saw, and a circular saw, a nail gun, a crowbar, an iron rod, and toolboxes were still there. She frowned. Even if the work had been discontinued, the joiners should have picked up their tools. But this question, too, was answered when she held a screwdriver up to the light and saw that the writing on the handle was Russian. Zalachenko had imported the tools, and probably the workers as well. She switched on the circular saw, and a green light went on. There was power. She turned it off. At the far end of the room were 3 doors to smaller rooms, perhaps the old offices. She tried the handle of the door on the north side of the building. Locked. She went back to the tools and got a crowbar. It took her a while to break open the door. It was pitch black inside the room and smelled musty. She ran her hand along the wall and found a switch that lit a bare bulb in the ceiling. Salander looked around in astonishment. The furniture in the room consisted of 3 beds, with soiled mattresses, and another 3 mattresses on the floor. Filthy bed linen was strewn around. To the right was a 2-ring electric stove, and some pots next to a rusty water tap. In a corner stood a tin bucket and a roll of toilet paper. Somebody had lived here. Several people. Then she saw that there was no handle on the inside of the door. She felt an ice-cold shiver run down her back. There was a large linen cupboard at the far end of the room. She opened it and found 2 suitcases. Inside the one on top were some clothes. She rummaged through them and held up a dress with a Russian label. She found a handbag and emptied the contents on the floor. From among the cosmetics and other bits and pieces, she retrieved a passport belonging to a young, dark-haired woman. It was a Russian passport, and she sounded out the name as Valentina. Salander walked slowly from the room. She had a feeling of déjà vu. She had done the same kind of crime scene examination in a basement in Hedeby 2.5 years earlier. Women's clothes. A prison. She stood there a long time, thinking. It bothered her that the passport and clothes had been left behind. It did not feel right. Then she went back to the assortment of tools and rummaged about until she found a powerful flashlight. She checked that there was life in the batteries and went downstairs into the larger workshop. The water from the puddles on the floor seeped into her boots. The nauseating stench of rotting matter grew stronger the farther into the workshop she went. It seemed to be worst when she was in the middle of the room. She stopped next to the foundation of one of the old brick furnaces, which was filled with water almost to the brim. She shone her flashlight onto the coal-black surface of the water but could not make anything out. The surface was partly covered by algae that had formed a green slime. Nearby she found a long steel rod which she stuck into the pool and stirred around. The water was only about 20 inches deep. Almost immediately the rod bumped into something. She manipulated it this way and that for several seconds before a body rose to the surface, face first, a grinning mask of death and decomposition. Breathing through her mouth, Salander looked at the face in the beam of the flashlight and saw that it was a woman, possibly the woman from the passport photograph. She knew nothing about the speed of decay in cold, stagnant water, but the body seemed to have been in the pool for a long time. There was something moving on the surface of the water, larvae of some sort. She let the body sink back beneath the surface and poked around more with the rod. At the edge of the pool she came across something that might have been another body. She left it there and pulled out the rod, letting it fall to the floor, as she stood thinking next to the pool. Salander went back up the stairs. She used the crowbar to break open the middle door. The room was empty. She went to the last door and slotted the crowbar in place. But before she began to force it, the door swung open a crack. It was not locked. She nudged it open with the crowbar and looked around. The room was about 100 feet square. It had windows at a normal height, with a view of the yard in front of the brickworks. She could see the gas station on the hill. There was a bed, a table, and a sink with dishes. Then she saw a bag lying open on the floor. There were banknotes in it. Surprised, she took 2 steps forward before she noticed that the room was warm and saw an electric heater in the middle of the room. Then she saw that the red light was on the coffee machine. Someone was living here. She was not alone in the building. She spun around and ran through the inner room, out the doors, and towards the exit in the outer workshop. She stopped 5 steps short of the stairwell when she saw that the exit had been closed and padlocked. She was locked in. Slowly, she turned and looked around, but there was no one.
"Hello, little sister,"
came a cheerful voice from somewhere to her right. She turned to see Niedermann's vast form materialize from behind some packing crates. In his hand was a large knife.
"I was hoping I'd have a chance to see you again," Niedermann said. "Everything happens so fast the last time."
Salander looked around.
"Don't bother," Niedermann said. "It's just you and me, and there's no way out except through the locked door behind you."
Salander turned her eyes to her half-brother.
"How's the hand?" she said.
Niedermann was smiling at her. He raised his right hand and showed her. His little finger was missing.
"It got infected. I had to chop it off."
Niedermann could not feel pain. Salander had sliced his hand open with a spade at Gosseberger only seconds before Zalichenko had shot her in the head.
"I should have aimed for your skull," Salander said in a neutral tone. "What the hell are you doing here? I thought you'd left the country months ago."
He smiled at her again.